your detector resolution. So these guys will be oscillating back and forth with some very short distance scale, but they'll be traveling farther than just an ordinary particle would because they're oscillating back and forth. So they can have different ionization properties, and you can also look for that. So in this paper, there's a list of, if you scan through all the possible values of the strong interaction scale, there's completely different things to look for as you scale through the size. So you can look for these anomalous curved tracks from very long strings, displaced vertices, anomalous annihilation, black hadron showers, hidden blue ball decays, and photon showers. So there's all kinds of things that we need to be able to simulate if we're interested in thinking outside the box for LHC. In this hidden valley scenario of Strassler and Zurich, the idea is that, again, like in our general picture, there's some barrier that prevents us from seeing this new sector. Over here, there's some hidden valley, and there's some barrier that prevents us from seeing it. Could be that we need to, there's a heavy, heavy particle that we have to produce. We haven't had enough energy to produce it to get over the barrier. If we get over the barrier, we can produce the hadrons in the hidden valley, and those hadrons can be metastable, and some of them can decay back into the standard model eventually. So the picture looks like this. It's sort of like in grad school when you did E plus E minus the hadrons. But now the quarks go through a gauge boson and produce the new quarks of the hidden valley sector. Those guys have their own parton shower with their new gauge interactions. Then they can hadronize, and then produce hadrons in the valley sector. So the distinction between these three different vague categories that I outlined is sort of in here. In Marcus's scenario, you don't break the string, so you don't get all these various different types of hadrons coming out. In the unparticle scenario, you only have this parton shower. You don't have this confining transition to hadrons. So that's the distinction between the three is what happens at this stage. So if these hadrons are metastable, then they can decay back. Some of them will decay back into standard model particles, and you can look for those. Ones that don't decay back fast enough will escape the detector as missing energy if they don't have standard model charges. So the features of the hidden valley, you can get boosted production, and you need to look at jet substructure to pick out what's going on. You can have long-lived resonances, large missing energy, displaced vertices, and multi-particle production. You can have up to 60 particles in your final state. So again, a challenge for experimentalists and Monte Carlo generators. And finally, our last topic, unparticles. So this is probably the thing that you've heard least about, I hope. So the idea of unparticles is that instead of a propagator that goes like 1 over p squared, you have a propagator that goes like 1 over p squared to some funny power. So d here is supposed to represent the dimension of the unparticle field, the scaling dimension. Remember, first approximation, we're treating it as a conformal field theory. So this field has some scaling dimension, which has to be between 1 and 2 if it's a scalar. So when d equals 1, this goes back to the ordinary propagator. And when d equals 2, it doesn't make sense anymore because the propagator is momentum independent. So, but it's perfectly allowed by conformal field theory to have a scalar propagator with a dimension between 1 and 2. And you can see that in various ways. The way Georgi did it was by dimensional analysis. You can go to ADS CFT and use string theory, blah, 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 and get the same answer. The reason Howard called it unparticles is if you look at the phase space associated with this propagator, it looks like this form, which, if you're an expert on phase space, looks like a fractional number of particles, phase space. So because this is some weakly coupled description of a conformal field theory, we know that it has to be equivalent to Randall-Sundrum 2. Randall-Sundrum is the theory where there's a UV brain and an IR brain at the TEV scale. That's also called Randall-Sundrum 1 because there's two brains. The theory where there's just a UV brain and no infrared brain is called Randall-Sundrum 2. Is that clear? There's one brain, so it's called Randall-Sundrum 2. Randall-Sundrum 1 has two brains. So Randall-Sundrum 2 only has the Planck brain or UV brain, and the space extends to arbitrarily small energies in the dual description. So that's a theory that's conformal. I assume you've heard about Randall-Sundrum many times by now. Randall-Sundrum is supposed to be dual to some conformal field theory that's broken in the infrared. The breaking corresponds to that TEV brain. So if we don't have a TEV brain, there's no breaking of the conformal symmetry, so it's conformal all the way down. So this is just another way to rewrite some Randall-Sundrum 2 model.
So D is fractional, and you have strange cut structure.
Yeah.
And that's allowed, and that's a very unusual analytic structure.
Well, it's required by conformal symmetry. Well, it's the same cut structure as if you had a massless charged particle that couples to massless gauge bosons. Right? If you resum the electron propagator. If you resum the electron propagator, you get this type of propagator where the dimension depends on some anomalous dimension. The problem with that is that it's not a gauge invariant field, so that dimension is gauge variant. Here we're assuming this is a gauge invariant field, so it's a gauge invariant anomalous dimension.
So what's special about dimension two?
This effective description stops working. So
there's some other one that works.
Yes. So I can extend on my previous comment to get to that. So we know that this theory with the dimension between 1 and 2 is equivalent to Randall-Sundrum 2. No infrared brain, exactly conformal in the infrared. So I was going to say that's why most of you don't care about this theory, because you didn't care about Randall-Sundrum 2 either. There's no Monte Carlo generator that has Randall-Sundrum 2 in it. So it's not surprising there's no Monte Carlo generator that has some particle in it. But to get to Matt's point, since we know the mapping between this unparticle theory and Randall-Sundrum 2, you can go beyond dimension 2, and then what you see is that you can't write down an effective four-dimensional theory when you go beyond 2. You need the full 5D Randall-Sundrum theory. Is that satisfying? One way to think about it is that, if you think about what kind of action this has an action that grows with momentum. When d is bigger than 2, the action would decrease as you increase momentum. So it wouldn't make a sensible effective theory. So the pure unparticles are equivalent to Randall-Sundrum 2, and we don't care about Randall-Sundrum 2. But if we break the conformal symmetry, then we do care, because for all those years we cared about Randall-Sundrum 1, which is just a broken Randall-Sundrum 2. So by putting in an IR cutoff at the TEV scale, Randall-Sundrum 2 becomes Randall-Sundrum 1. Then you can start addressing the hierarchy problem or electron physics in general. And when Randall-Sundrum did that, of course they did it in the other order, we've got all this new phenomenology for LHC. And we're working with Monte Carlo generators to put in Randall-Sundrum resonances. So what this unparticle does is it gives us a different way to break conformal symmetry, which is usually when you have more than one way of describing something, some things are easier in one language and some things are easier in the other language. So in Randall-Sundrum 2, the spectral density for our field is just some power law distribution. when we put in the infrared brain to turn it into Randall Sundrum 1, we get a tower of KK modes. So the spectral density collapses to a sum of delta functions. So each one of these is one of the KK modes of Randall Sundrum. So you can sort of imagine how this turns into that by putting it into a box. But in this unparticle language, there's a simple way to break the conformal symmetry in a different way, which was first proposed in this paper by Fox et al. So instead of having 1 over p squared to a funny power, you could have 1 over mass squared minus p squared to a funny power. That gives you a spectral density that looks like this. So it has to be 0 below this threshold where the mass is, and it diverges at the mass, just like this diverges at 0 momentum. And then it has this power law structure out here. So at high momentum, it still looks like a conformal field theory, just like this did. And in the infrared, it's got a hard infrared cutoff. Yeah?
John, this last case requires that there's still a massless particle in the theory.
This case?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Because if there were only massive particles in the theory, the lowest feature of the spectral function would be a photon. So this is like the electron plus photon.
Oh, yes. In the underlying description, there are some massless particles to produce this strange behavior. But
they've got to be invisible.
They have to be invisible. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't exist.
Right.
In orbital, they have to be in this new hidden sector, massless guys. And our only hope is that there's some massive guy that couples to us and them. Otherwise, we won't see them. So, first I'll do maybe the best case scenario. The best case scenario is that this massive guy that covers the first of our sectors has QCD interactions. If it has QCD interactions, then the LHC is a great way to find these hidden massless guys. So you could just calculate, the easiest thing to do is calculate the forward scattering. So we have some quarks, they produce a gluon, they come back, they go through this heavy guy that couples to both sectors, back to a gluon, back to quarks, and take the cut of this forward scattering and get the cross-section for production of these crazy things. So, for scalars, it's easy to show that the unparticle, colored unproduction of these colored unparticles is 2 minus d times the regular cross-section for an ordinary particle. So you see that something funny happens when he gets to 2 in the full 5D theory. But in between, you can between 1 and 2, you can calculate everything you need. So what would you actually see at the LHC if you produce these things? So if these things are stable on detector time scales, then you have R hadrons. You would also see anomalous jets with anomalous energy loss. So, for example, we pair-produce these guys that couple to QCD and to our new sector. So the red cone is supposed to illustrate the QCD parton shower. And if the new sector has a stronger coupling than QCD, then there'll be another parton shower on top of that. So it'll be radiating the gluons in the hidden sector. Those cones will be bigger if it's more strongly coupled. But we don't see those hidden gluons. They're invisible to us. So there's missing PT and ET directed along these jets. So there's a wide invisible jet superimposed on top of the visible ordinary jet.
John, can you explain again why the jets are missing?
So we produce this heavy guy that's coming out like this. The heavy guy is the guy that's doing the shower. So he's controlling, that momentum controls what the direction of the jets, that initial momentum. And so that's getting spread out between the gluons and the hidden gluons.
If it was more weakly coupled, then the
the hidden shower would be inside the QCD.
Yeah.
You could also imagine having some final state radiation of the hidden gluon, so there'd be an invisible jet in addition, with no jet inside of it. And
the heavy particle has QCD.
Yeah, in the most optimistic scenario, we're assuming it has QCD quantum numbers, so we can produce it at the LHC.
And then it radiates into both sectors.
And then it radiates in both sectors, and we have jets and hidden jets.
Right.
So I believe this is something that's not in Pythia yet, but Steve says he's thinking about it. I think the best case scenario is you have some initial gluon, so some initial state radiation, so you get a gluon jet. It doesn't have a hidden jet, and you produce these heavy guys that couple to both sectors. So in this case, the missing energy is opposed to this gluon jet.
But you're just going to get this much of the jet.
Well, it depends how much energy is coming on. So that's a question for the experimentalist, how, well, eventually their jet energy resolution will be compared to how much we expect to come off here. But how much we expect to come off here, we need Monte Carlo to tell us.
And this is especially difficult because your null hypothesis for missing energy is that it's a mismeasurement of the jets you observe. Mm-hmm. And here the missing energy is actually directly along those jets.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
the first cleanup that you usually do is to veto if it's aligned with the jet.
Exactly this kind of jet.
So that's why we think outside the box to think of things that are being missed, right? That's our job. Find things like that. So once you stop throwing away these important new physics events, try and test whether this really is new physics if you had a Monte Carlo simulation that told you the distribution of the missing energy. Hopefully, we'll see, but hopefully the distribution of this missing energy looks different from the experimental resolution. So that was the best case scenario. Now I'm going to tell you something. It may not be the worst case scenario, but it's pretty bad. So let's suppose that the Higgs has some large anomalous dimension. So it's some kind of unparticle. So we'll just write down the effective action for an unparticle. So it's got a partial derivative squared plus a mass term squared to some funny power. That's what gives us Howard's propagator for the n-particle. Now we want it to interact, so we need to make those gauge covariant derivatives, and we'd like to give the top quark a mass at least. So gauge covariant derivatives, that's easy. The top quark coupling now is a higher dimension operator, greater than dimension 4, because the Higgs has a dimension greater than 1. So this is an irrelevant coupling. Yeah?
Could you go back to the previous one? So, I get really confused. The radiation is, in the hidden sector, is it gauge boson, it's scalars, or it's unparticles?
Well, at the unparticle description level, we're agnostic, because we just say we have this crazy propagator with funny power, and that somehow takes account of whatever stuff, NASA stuff is being radiated.
Okay.
But in our heart of hearts, people who are raised on gauge theories, everything looks like a gauge theory, so it must be a gauge theory, right?
Right, but if it's a strongly coupled theory, like a pion nucleon theory.
Which is a strongly coupled theory? It's a strongly coupled conformal theory, yeah.
Well, let's just say it's a strongly coupled non-conformal theory, like pion nucleon theory. Then you would expect a larger angle radiation of heavy things, which are invisible.
Yeah, that's why these cones are, if it's more strongly coupled than QCD, these invisible cones will be bigger than the QCD cones.
No, because QCD, it falls off like some power.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it would have a different analytical. The function would actually be all less steep.
Okay.
Yeah,
something that somehow could be incorporated into the model.
Well, I assume that when you get to putting it into Monte Carlo, you'll run a Hartmann shower, so you could put in that the shower is into scalars or vectors and see what happens. I mean, presumably to do this, we want a Hartmann shower description rather than an unparticle propagator description to get a more accurate. The information you can get from the unparticle propagator is limited compared to what you can get from a real Hartmann shower.
Right. Or maybe not a Hartmann shower. Maybe
some other shower.
Some other. If we stay with this picture for just a minute, I mean, it's quite possible that the invisible stuff, if we call it that, in one cone is on this side, and in the other cone is on the same side. So it's not as though, is that right, that all the invisible radiation is actually along the jet, would be off the one side or the other? I mean, I know that it starts with the source jet, but I mean, any individual event.
Yeah, I think it could fluctuate, yeah.
Yeah, it could fluctuate. So I think that would be the thing to pick up is the case where the fluctuation is asymmetric in some sense. So you have real.
That would be a good question for the Monte Carlo to answer, noise. Because the unparticle propagator wouldn't tell us that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we write down our unparticle description for Higgs, we give it gauge covariant derivatives, and couple it to the top. Top coupling has to be an irrelevant operator. I'll stop now. The top coupling is an irrelevant operator because the Higgs has dimension bigger than 1. In the standard model, it's dimension 1, so it's exactly dimension 4. Here, it's bigger than dimension 4, so it's suppressed by some cutoff scale. So we already know this is some effective theory below some cutoff. And once we have gauge couplings and top quark couplings, there'll be loop corrections that renormalize this action. And those things should give us local counterterms. So the types of local counterterms we would get are Higgs squared, Higgs quartic, and constant. So we'll get some potential. So we can imagine that things have the right sign, so the Higgs gets a bev. So this crazy un-Higgs model will break electroweak symmetry if the Higgs gets a bev. And from dimensional analysis, you can tell that the divergence in the Higgs mass will be softer than in the standard model. Because you know that the dimension of the Higgs mass term is 2D as a weakly coupled description. Or from that Lagrangian explicit calculation from this quartic term, because you have these extra powers here, you end up with this power in the divergence. So as D gets closer to 2, divergence gets softer. So this could potentially solve a little hierarchy problem. And if you put in the numbers, the loop corrections are smaller than the tree corrections. If you want the cutoff to be 10 TeV, then you need the dimension to be bigger than about 1.7. So this is.
The same kind of assumptions that we make in random subroom, right? This mark in suppresses interaction types.
What do you mean by valid?
Almost dimensionless.
example, where we ask that question is if you write down this Lagrangian, is it something that's radiatively stable and makes sense up to some scale, like 10 keV or something? And that would be the minimum version of that question.
Yeah, so that's part of what goes into this calculation.
So I think it makes sense to talk about having some dimension if you're far above the threshold. Near the threshold,
we're just using this ansatz from Irvine, which in 5D language means we're using Bessel functions because Bessel functions are maps.
And in the 5D effective theory, if you try to do big directions, it's not going to work.
In the 5D theory?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this is getting technical, but... You can change the threshold behavior by going the 5D theory. The way you get this threshold behavior is you couple it, your field, to some background that has a profile. And depending on the power of that profile that gives it a bulk mass, you can get the Bessel function, which gives you the simple ansatz. If you have some other power, you'll get Whitaker functions or whatever you like.
But you're somehow not computing things with all the exact reactions. I guess I'm just wondering, does the statement about the little hierarchy problem depend sensitively on the threshold or not?
No, it depends what's happening on at the cutoff.
So you're saying that as long as the dimension is close to true there,
divergence is controlled by the high end of the behavior. So Falkowski and Perez Victoria have calculated the precision electroweak loops for this. So what this is supposed to show you is that as you go from a dimension near one, it exactly tracks the standard model Higgs correction. As you go up to dimension two, these points get squeezed down to where S and T are zero. So increasing the dimension makes it work better than the standard model. And what this is done for a threshold of 100 GeV. So another way you can make it better than the standard model is that you could make the mass 90 GeV like the precision electroweak fit prefers. And it wouldn't have been seen at LEP if the dimension is big enough. So here's this limit, assuming C squared is the suppression of the production cross-section of the standard model. So the suppression of this cross-section varies with the dimension. So the production cross-sections can be quite small, small enough that LEP wouldn't have seen the 90 GeV on Higgs. So it would have been missed at LEP. So we have one more shot at it, LHC. So with the current searches, you would not find this guy if it was missed at LEP.
And there's no way to have it.
No. Well, I told you this was going to be one of the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
But
Tevatron, the suppression is just exactly what it is.
Yeah. And we can't use standard model quite yet anyway.
But if we have some way of approaching all these crazy ideas with unparticles, quirks, hidden valleys, Monte Carlo showers, and hidden sectors, maybe we can dig out some other signal once we have the right tools. That's the hope. So, conclusions. There's no compelling non-SUSY model. So some people would still argue that SUSY's compelling just because it's so beautiful, even though it sucks. It's a personal preference. There's probably lots of other ways to address the hierarchy problem that we haven't thought of, but model builders have given up, I think. We're ready to start looking at actual signals and colliders instead of coming up with crazy models. And the good thing is that nature is smarter than us. Nature knows the answer, and nature will soon tell us the answer if we are able to ask the right questions. Thanks.
Can you say a few more words about what happens to the Higgs and
Yeah, it showers into the hidden sector, so that's, in the unparticle language, that's taken into account by the crazy cut structure of that strange.
But so does it eventually do the case and just kind of balance the case, or it just goes in there?
What should happen is it should decay, should be able to decay back to standard model states, but it might have radiated some energy. So,
but eventually you will have the
problem. Eventually you should get back to standard model.
It's probably solved.
Well, it doesn't have a mass shell, so it's like a jet.
Right.
But
you
also have
a particle. Right.
It's not shell in the same way as like a box. I mean, it's a massive thing, just quite massive. So.
Right. But the grappling is much stronger, so it's a broad.
So just to clarify, for the negative Z plus a thing, say we're at left, there would be a recoil of a spectrum of largely unobservable stuff.
Yeah, there's some distribution between the different stuff. And
so if you measure the recoil spectrum, you would see some broad amorphous thing. That thing was not visible in the detector.
There's also some visible.
The kick's been invisible, so it's just a few HC would be able to look for it.
That's what I'm hearing that.
If you have a production process.
And depending, but you know, say VG fusion into invisible, which is something that is good for standard model things, that probably wouldn't be, because that automatically sums over a large spectrum, right?
Right.
That probably wouldn't be that much worse, I would think, in this scenario. So it would have some LHC signal.
Assuming that the production process.
Yeah, I found the problem is put on the cross-section smaller.
But your
the cross-section is smaller, that's I think. There you're really relying on having the strange dimension at the threshold, which doesn't make any sense to me.
The cross-section is smaller for the thing that you're calling the Higgs, but there's a spectrum of stuff. Something has to supply all the QD coupling, right?
No.
No.
Because it doesn't have to have the same bed as the standard model.
So what is Turing W unitarity here?
If you work out that effective action layer wrote down, there are 6-point couplings with 4 W's and 2 Higgs's. So that plus the Higgs propagator can throw us as W in the scatter.
But it always involves the VV somewhere, is that right?
There's a 4W.
So you would discover.
So in addition, to the Higgs exchange, there's 4-point W coupling with 2 Higgs bevs. The sum of these unitarizes the WW scattering. But this VEB is not the standard model VEB. It depends on the parameters of the model.
So if you did VV fusion at the LHC, what you're saying is you have to...
It mostly comes from this contact interaction.
Okay, so you're going for the contact interaction, so you'd be looking for VV plus crazy stuff or something like that. Is that right? VV fusion to...
These are just VEBs, so
is there a direction to support all the current?
Yeah.
And the
but what would VV fusion produce?
Most of the time it just goes back to W's.
Right. Okay, so that's what I just said. So the idea then would be that you'd have to really look at the anomalous view, excuse me, VV fusion, the VV production in VV fusion, so you're really studying in some sense.
No, there's no resonance.
Well, I understand that, you know, but
can you actually compute? Have you tried to actually compute this, including the corrections?
So we did it in the 4D effectiveness curve, and Kalkowski did it in 5D theory, and showed in general.
At some point, Kalkowski was claiming to have a theory that had a mass gap and no particles and no massless stuff. So that I completely don't believe. But you had some different examples. Insert some profile and some
z-squared
profile.
Yeah, I think it's
talking
about the same theory.
But in that theory, you haven't computed corrections, right? You have some three-level potential that you haven't really solved.
Maybe we should talk about this afterwards. This is like pretty far from Monte Carlo.
Am I chairing this?
I think it's time for coffee.
Good.
Coffee on me.